Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath, Debbie Brook, with Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Today is November 30th, 2011. This is going to be show number 5 with our co-host, Dr. Adil Kasim, MD, who is a fourth-generation homeopath, cardiologist, and that's a lot of years of practice that he has. And we're looking forward to discussion today about heart palpitations and how he deals with this type of symptom and the use of homeopathy. We're going to be waiting for him to sign on, and we're also going to talk today about the Liga, which is starting either today or tomorrow in India, and he will be there giving a talk. He will also tell us...
Hello.
Hello, Dr. Adil.
Yeah, how are you?
We have a good line in today. We've missed you from all of the traveling that both you and I have done, and I hope everyone is refreshed from their holiday in America. We had Thanksgiving, and we're just getting our show back on the road here until we take a break again for the seasonal holidays, Christmas and Hanukkah and all the other holidays, Kwanzaa.
Hopefully our Thanksgiving was a great event.
Yes, I had a good time to relax, and I actually went on a cruise to the Bahamas.
And wow.
Yeah, so just a lot of relaxation away from the computer. And so now I'm sort of getting back here. We're going to be talking today about heart palpitations, and you're going to fill us in on the symptoms, what people experience, and how they might recognize when they need to see a physician about it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, palpitations are a very, very common symptom. But before going there, I would like to tell the audience that in India we have a great homeopathic feast in the form of Liga. The 66th International Congress is about to start tomorrow, and I would be presenting 3 papers there on different subjects of cardiology and homeopathy, and the various new drug provings which we have carried out here at the Academy, National Academy of Homeopathy India. Of course, they are there on my website, but yet I would be presenting a paper at the International Congress tomorrow. Talking about palpitations, well, palpitation basically means an undue awareness of one's own heartbeat. Normally, one does not hear or does not concentrate their own heartbeats, but when one is supposed to feel or hear their own heartbeats, then it's called palpitation. It can be in the form of flutter, a pounding sensation, or just an uncomfortable sensation in the chest. It can be in the neck, or simply an increased awareness of one's heartbeat. So that is how we define palpitations, basically.
And everybody has probably felt that at one time or another, like, let's say, if they've been doing a running or going up and down a lot of stairs.
Yeah, practically every single day, every normal individual does experience episodes of palpitations. But only when it continues for a long time, or they're disturbing to the patients, or basically in their routine life, then it's a sort of concern to the patient, and then cognizance is taken so that we prescribe medications and go on with it.
Okay.
So, see, normally, I mean, whenever a person is anxious, anxiety is one of the commonest cause of palpitation. And anxiety can be simple anxiety going to meet someone or for going for an exam or just unknown anxiety. We have got drugs like aconite, calcarea carb, Kaliars. Now, these drugs, they develop sudden anxiety of unknown things. I mean, if you ask a patient, they would not be able to tell you why they're anxious, but they manifest as palpitations. Likewise, when one is angered and is unable to express anger, for example, a phosphorus patient, basically phosphorus is a very calm, cool, quiet guy, but once he gets anger and is unable to express anger, then he gets bouts of palpitations. Likewise, Argentine nitricum patients, I mean, these people have got an anticipatory anxiety. If I have to reach the airport at 4 o'clock, and if I am an Argentine nitricum patient, I will be, having palpitations if I am late by even a minute or so. So, these are emotional causes, one of the commonest causes, of course, apart from running, exercising, doing some activities which are not there in the daily routines, they would cause palpitations. But then they are not a cause of worry. What is a cause of worry are palpitations due to cardiac arrhythmias. When the heart basically has fault, then one needs to worry about. And that constitutes about 40 to 45% of cases of palpitations. Then there are certain drugs, like many people are taking drugs for asthma, like theophylline. Practically all theophyllines, sprays or tablets, they are known to cause palpitations. But then again, they are not a cause of concern because once you stop those drugs, then over a period of time, palpitations also stop. Of course, many people are alcoholics. Till the time when you drink alcohol, nothing happens. But when alcohol starts drinking you, then one of the very important features are palpitations. Not to mention about caffeine, cocaine and tobacco. Yes, they cause palpitations, but then not in everyone. Likewise, heart failure patients, they take drug like digoxin, Digitalis. And one of the important features of Digitalis is, in therapeutically, it decreases the heart rate. But when it starts causing palpitations, then it's a matter of concern.
Are you talking about the crude drug, the allopathic digitalis?
Yeah, the allopathic drug. Yeah, allopathic drug. Then that's normally supposed to decrease the heart rate. But if it's increasing the heart rate, then we have to seriously think whether the patient is going in for digitalis toxicity, and you have to measure digitalis levels. Now,
okay.
As far as cardiac causes of palpitations are concerned, or arrhythmias are concerned, one of the commonest arrhythmias is called atrial fibrillation or an atrial flutter. Now, recently, hearing the show, I got a call from a patient called as Benny Tyler from Sydney. He's a 52 years old male and he's been suffering from atrial fibrillation since 2 or 3 years. And unfortunately, the cause for his atrial fibrillation is undiagnosed. And he's on a lot of medications, including Digitalis. But unfortunately, since past 3.5 months, those medications were stopped, allopathic medications were stopped, because he started having Digitalis poisoning. So he was in search for another method. And luckily, his homeopath out there probably has heard our show. And he suggested that he would contact me. And after taking his history online, we could come to Lycopodium as his remedy. I've given him only last week, so we don't know the effect of Lycopodium. And in times of distress, when his heart rate rises to, say, 200, 240 per minute, which is what happens in atrial fibrillation, the atrium beats unduly fast. And the rate may reach from 160 to, say, 200, 240, 300. It's a great discomfort to the patient. The pulse is almost imperceptible. You can't palpate the pulse in such heart rates. So in such situation, the drug given to him in extreme situation would be Carbovege for this gentleman. Likewise, we have got sinus tachycardia. Sinus tachycardia means just increase of your heart rate the normal heart rate increases to, the normal heart rate would, in an adult, would vary from 80 to say 100 or 110 at the max, depending upon geography and the height and weight of the patient. But then not more than 120 per minute at, for an average adult, is permissible. If it goes more than 120, 140 per minute, it's called sinus tachycardia. Supraventricular tachycardia, supra means above, and above the ventricle. That means we are talking about some fallacies in the atrium. Now, again, we have got tachycardia ranging from 160, 180 beats per minute. And but then supraventricular tachycardia are not detrimental to life, or they are not fatal, as are ventricular tachycardia. That means the fallacy or the problem is in the ventricle. If such ventricular tachycardia occurs, definitely it's a matter of concern and they need to be stopped. We have got loads of drug, and I should thank Dr. Kent. I mean, about a century ago, this gentleman, while writing the repertory, has written rubrics for tachycardias, ventricular tachycardias, supraventricular tachycardias, and he's giving host of drugs which in today's age we use it very effectively in varying potencies, right from mother tinctures to millisimal scale potencies, and we're getting results.
Okay, so this is a very technical, I'm getting feedback. Maybe you have something else on over there.
Yeah. See, now ventricular, supraventricular tachycardias may cause palpitations, but then they can be asymptomatic. For example, they may not cause chest pain or headache or dizziness or nothing else. But it's a matter of concern for common man who is listening to the show. Palpitations associated with dizziness or syncope. Syncope means sudden loss of consciousness. It suggests tachyarrhythmias, and they're potentially very serious, and they need to be seen by a cardiologist. Of course, as homeopathy is concerned, there are three important drugs for such a situation: Sumbul, Calamine, and Glonine. And I mean, we are very happy daily, day in and day out, if such patients come to us, palpitations associated with dizziness or syncope, and they are serious, still homeopathy has got many, three drugs: Sumbul, Calamine, and Glonine. What would not think about Calamine, a drug for arrhythmias, but it's a very, very useful drug when you have to control such arrhythmias and palpitations. Also, there's something called orthostatic intolerance. I mean, whenever the patient or a person stands upright and suddenly starts having palpitations, then again it's a matter of concern. So these palpitations, orthostatic intolerance, occurs because of inadequate cerebral perfusion moment the patient stands up. Again, we have a specific drug for this situation called as Tabacum. This is very common in females of childbearing age. And of course, apart from a gynec seeing the situation, a cardiologist also has to monitor such a female, especially when she is pregnant. Tabacum can be used in pregnancy as well. And it's a very, symptom which is annoying, quite annoying, because the female keeps on getting such a situation, palpitations as well as dizziness and orthostatic intolerance. And in modern medicine, we don't have good drugs to control such a situation. And many of these drugs are forbidden in pregnancy. So here, homeopathy can play a very, very important role. Pregnancy causing palpitations, and that too in upright posture because of inadequate cerebral perfusion.
Does that tell us some information about the female heart?
Here in this case, not necessarily the heart is affected, but there may be many factors. For example, not many females, pregnant females, get such type of orthostatic hypotension. There's something called as subclavian steel syndrome. I mean, subclavian is an artery which arises from the aorta. Now, whenever there is a vasoconstriction, normally when the blood is pumped, it goes via the internal carotid arteries to the brain. But sometimes in some persons, because of unknown reason, much of the blood which is supposed to go to the internal carotid arteries shunted to the subclavian artery and then to the arm. Subclavian supplies the arm. And in such a situation, you get a syndrome called a subclavian steel syndrome. That is, subclavian artery stealing the blood from the internal carotid artery. And that is why in certain postures you get palpitations and dizziness. And in such a situation, unfortunately, in modern medicine or even other pathies, we hardly have drugs. But in homeopathy, we do have got drugs for such a situation as well. And one of them is tabacum.
Right. Tabacum is very powerful and it works pretty immediately.
Yeah. It's really. And you don't require to give in high potencies. You require to hardly 6, 30 or 200 potencies are fair enough. Do not require much repetitions as well. In such situations, palpitations, tabacum, drugs like Sumbul, they work wonders.
Right. How do we spell the Sumbul? Which one is that?
Ferula Sumbul is a lesser known drug as far as homeopaths are concerned, but an equally effective drug as far as heart is concerned. And Sumbul has a wide array of effects on the cardiology, including dissolution of plaques, coronary plaques, which are causing ischemic heart disease. Sumbul has a great effect on them, apart from palpitations and the same symptoms like which cactus exhibits, constriction of the heart. All these are there in Sumbul, and it's a very, very effective drug. We have proved Sumbul and the academy, and we have found to be very useful clinically as far as many cardiac disorders are concerned, palpitations being one of them.
Okay. Is that going to be one of the drugs that you're going to talk about at LIGA?
Yes, definitely. I'll be definitely talking about Sumbul. We'll be talking about aconite ferox, again, a very, very important cardiac remedy. Again, a wonderful drug for palpitations as well. We'll be talking about osteoarthritic nosode, which we have recently proved last year. We'll be talking about gelsemium, glonine, stanum met. Nine drugs which have been very helpful, and we have been proving those drugs. And a lot of information has been gathered around of these drugs. Coming to back to palpitations, the common causes which one sees, anemia. Anemia is a very, very common cause of palpitations. When the hemoglobin level goes down, in Indian females, I can say the hemoglobin level should be around 12 to 14 gram per deciliter. But in American females or European females, the hemoglobin should be around 13 to 15 gram per cent. But when it goes below 10, say to 9, then many females, although not all, but many females would have experienced palpitations, especially when doing routine works. Now, increasing the hemoglobin by, say, giving iron tablets would take time, or folic acid or iron tablets would take time. Say, it requires 2 months or at least 1.5 months to increase 1 gram of hemoglobin with the regular iron medications. During that time, it is very annoying for the patient that just because of the hemoglobin, she is getting or he is getting palpitations. In such a situation, we have got specific remedies like China phosphoric acid to be given in mother tincture forms daily, which definitely works, although they may themselves not increase hemoglobin, but then definitely they decrease palpitations and they decrease other symptoms of anemia like increased fatigue or early fatigue, swelling and gaseous abdomen bloating, which frequently occurs in anemic patients.
Very good. So this is in a mother tincture.
Yeah. You have to give in mother tincture, because otherwise if you start giving in potency form, you tend to prove the drug in that patient. So that is harmful. Now, again, what happens is in extremes of climates, for example, there's sudden change of weather. It typically happens in plateau regions. We have got, when the summer arrives in regions in this part of the world, it's terribly hot and we frequently have got electrolyte imbalance. Now, such electrolyte imbalance, although they may be corrected by giving salts, sachets of salts available, but then natrum muraticum and kali arsenicum given in decimal scale 3x, 1x, 2x, 3x, twice a day or thrice a day. Now, these electrolyte imbalance, one of the very, very first symptoms of hyponatremia or hypernatremia, hypokalemia or hyperkalemia, is palpitations. And natrum muraticum and kali ars both are very effective in reducing palpitations because of electrolyte imbalance. again, many, many females or even males suffer from hyperthyroidism, thyroid disorder, wherein you get tremors, you start losing weight, your eyes pop up, which we call in medical terminology as proptosis, and one of the very essential features is palpitations and inability to bear heat in any form. Hyperthyroid people cannot bear heat, and slightest of exposure to heat, they suddenly start getting palpitations, severe palpitations. So although they may be on certain drugs to reduce their thyroid levels or thyroid hormones, but one of the very effective drugs in particularly combating palpitations in hyperthyroid hyperthyroid people is Lycopus. Lycopus virginicus is an essential homeopathic remedy. Again, we use it either in tincture form or low potencies, say 6 or 30. And very, very effectively, till your level of thyroid hormones are controlled, it may take a week or it may take a month, even after administration of drugs, to control your thyroid state. In that period of time, a very effective use of Lycopus, not Lycopodium, it's Lycopus, definitely allays the problem of palpitation. Likewise, we have got various fevers. I mean, they may be typhoidal, they may be malarial, they may be because of tuberculosis and whatever. But one of our chief drugs called pyrogenum. Now, pyrogenum is chiefly selected when there is excessive palpitations, the heart rate is much, much more high than the fever. See, normally would we expect, with 1 degree rise of fever, there has to be a pulse rate rising by, say, 10 beats per minute. So if you have a fever of, say, 100 degrees Fahrenheit, you would have a palpitation, the heart rate, say, ranging to 100 to 120 beats per minute, depending upon your original heart rate. But suppose if you have a heart rate of, say, 160 beats per minute, and you have a fever of, say, 100 degrees Fahrenheit, then that is not expected. In such a situation, pyrogenum effectively tackles not only the fever but also the palpitations, and a very, very effective, rather the only drug in homeopathic materia medica, the parallels of which are baptisia, arnica and rustox. Only these three drugs come nearer pyrogen, but the most effective drug in tackling fever with palpitations is pyrogen.
Okay, this is a really powerful talk that you're giving today. Yes, keep going.
many people are suffering from diabetes, and many people are on insulin because for the diabetic state. Now, there is a point of time in the history of the patient when insulin stops acting, or rather overacts. That we call as Moon's phenomena. I mean, forget about the technical term. But then, sometimes, because of the non-adjustment of insulin levels, there is a state of hypoglycemia. And one of the first symptoms of hypoglycemia, apart from feeling hungry, is palpitations. Very, very effectively. I mean, you get palpitations, the patient knows that my sugar level is going down. I need to eat something. And every time you can't keep on having sugar and sweets in your pocket. There are times when this symptom becomes very annoying. I mean, in spite of your medicine man or physician taking the undue precautions to set your insulin right, he or she can't do so in a particular case. In such cases, we have got aurum metallicum. Low potencies of aurum metallicum, 3x, 6x, along with your insulin, would not let hypoglycemic attacks come and thereby reduce the tendency for palpitations. It's a very, very beautiful drug in controlling that annoying. Because after all, palpitation warns your body that your sugar is required. But then sometimes it's so annoying that you can't, at one place you can't adjust your insulin levels, at the other place you can't even stop the drug. And you are stuck in between having insulin, yet have to suffer from episodes of hypoglycemia and then palpitations. So in such a situation, aurum met solves the problem. Aurum met to be given 1x or 2x. It can be repeated twice a day, once a day. It can be taken over a period of months to 2 months, 4 months, 6 months. It's relatively safe. it does not produce other symptoms. At the same time, it decreases palpitations.
People are familiar with the Orimet as a remedy for depression, most likely.
Yeah, but then such drugs also have a very great role to play symptomatically when they are used for palpitations. Then there's something called as a pheochromocytoma, a very rare malignancy of the adrenal gland. Now, this generally occurs, I don't know how common it is in the Western world. I believe it's very quite common because nowadays we get young hypertensives. It's typically seen in young hypertensives. I mean, when I say young, I am talking about boys and girls aged, say, between 13 years to 20 years or 22 years. The typical complaint would be, Doc, I don't have any other complaint except that when I get up, my pillow starts pulling my head. I feel as if I should lie down something. And when you ask the patient, do you get a headache? I said, no, I don't get a headache. It's just when I get up from the bed early morning or whenever I'm lying on a supine position and try to get up, the sort of my pillow starts pulling my head and I get palpitations. Now, this is a very peculiar symptom and it's found only in pheochromocytoma. Then you ask the patient whether you get chest pain or chest discomfort or breathlessness or fatigue. None of those phenomena. Or swelling over the limbs. No, I don't get that. But when you measure the blood pressure of this 13-year-old boy or girl, the pressure can range anywhere from 170, 180 to 260 systolic. And diastolic could be anywhere from 110 to 140. Such high blood pressure. But constitutionally, the patient may have no symptoms or the only symptom would be palpitation.
So this child would probably tell their friend or their parent or their doctor or they would keep it to themselves?
Nearly 90% of cases, 95% of cases, depending upon literacy rate, even if it's literacy rate, the child would not know. They would complain of palpitations, but then palpitations are so common in children for varied reasons, more so emotionally. So they would not. So many cases. I've got 16 to 17 cases of pheochromocytoma under my care, and I can say all those 16 cases had actually come with their parents. The parents were my patients, are my patients rather, and they just accompanied my their parents and just dog just see my BP as well. It was just a child's play. And when I saw the BP, I was horrified. I couldn't tell them that you have such a high BP.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, when you do your sonography, and you do a CT CAT scan of the abdomen, then you find out a tumor and then everything comes into play. So they are actually accidentally detected rather than the only symptom of a pheochromocytoma in a young boy. But then that symptom of palpitation is quite persistent. The child or the boy or the girl does complain continuously, consistently of palpitations, but rather no one takes cognizance or awareness unless the patient or the parents themselves are very, very... I can say I've got two children who are children of doctors themselves. Their parents are doctors, and yet they missed out on such disorder.
Can I ask you, is this something that happens after a number of years, or you're saying at age 12, 13, 14?
Generally.
So are they noticing a change that they didn't have it and then they suddenly did?
No. What happens, pheochromocytoma is malignancy or cancer of neoplasm of the adrenal medulla. And there's a gland called adrenal gland which lies above the kidneys. And that is an effective, a very, very important gland in the constellation of endocrine glands, one of the most important after the pituitary is concerned. So, and that gland controls the sympathetic nervous system apart from the hypothalamus. We have got autonomic nervous system. Three types of nervous system exist in the body. One is the central nervous system composed of the brain and the spinal cord. Second is the peripheral nervous system composed of nerves which supply the arms, the legs, and the liver and the spleen. And there's something called as autonomic nervous system, which is controlled by a hypothalamic gland. That is of two parts, sympathetic nervous system and parasympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic component is also secretes a drug or is controlled by a hormone called adrenaline. And adrenaline is secreted by adrenal glands. So when you have a malignancy of adrenal glands, adrenaline is secreted too much and then you increase the BP. So unfortunately, this occurs very young in age, and one of the most important causes for hypertension in young males is pheochromocytoma, and that is malignancy of adrenal glands. Now, unfortunately, again, because the malignancy is a silent malignancy, it is a very, very slow growing tumor, but the only symptom is high BP and palpitations. So if you have a family history of malignancy, unfortunately, in all these 16 cases, none of them have a family history of malignancy at all. Neither they have family history of hypertension. So it's quite difficult to pinpoint as to who will have this pheochromocytoma. But one of the important features of pheochromocytoma is sustained palpitations. When a young boy or young girl complains of sustained palpitations, when I say young again, I repeat the age from, say, 13, 14 years to 20 to 25 years of age and further on, they should be screened for pheochromocytoma, wherein the only symptom would be palpitation, or another symptom would be as if my head is being pulled by the pillow when I wake up. These are the two symptoms. Why they occur, we don't know. Palpitation, of course, can be explained because of increased adrenaline. But why this peculiar symptom of the head being pulled down on the pillow, I don't know how to explain that, and no scientific reason has been given for that.
Dr. Adel, are you seeing more of this? Is there an explanation as to why? I mean, is this more common than it ever was in history?
Yeah. No, I don't say it's more common. It would have been there, say, 50 years ago also. But probably this entity was not known previously. It has come in highlight, and rather investigations have been coming. See, this pheochromocytoma can be detected only by a CT abdomen, or a person who does an ultrasonography of the abdomen with great precision and keeping in mind that there's something can be found in the suprarenal glands. Otherwise, this malignancy is such a slow-growing malignancy that it can be easily lost even by expert ultrasonologists. So only if you have got knowledge of such a disorder that there can be something like this, and it occurs generally in young people bearing high hypertension, then you specifically need to screen for such a disorder. And the only way to screen are two tests. One is ultrasonography of the abdomen or a CT scan of the abdomen, and secondly by urine epinephrines. Urinary epinephrines are your urinary catecholamine are special hormonal tests wherein you can catch up and increase amounts can lead to a suspicion of pheochromocytoma.
Okay, this is really fascinating, and you can tell us when you want.
Yeah, one more thing.
Okay.
No. I mean, now see what happens. One of the very important treatments for pheochromocytoma, because it's a slow-growing tumor, it gets lots of time. Because it occurs in young people who have not even started their lives, one of the important therapy is surgical. So it's really effective. But in spite of that, if recurrence occurs, which it hardly does so, but if it occurs, or if the patient cannot undergo a surgery for whatever, some different reasons, then specific drugs like Veratrum Viridi are very effectively controls not only the hypertension, but also the symptom of palpitation, which goes along with pheochromocytoma. But it does not control the malignant nature of that gland. For that, we need to give constitutional drugs like one of the very important drugs which I use in our practice, or rather which we need to use in constitutional drug, is phosphorus. Phosphorus has been used in all the 16 of my patients. I have used in 3 of my patients phosphorus. In 4 of my patients, calcarea group, one is calcarea iode, the other is calcarea carb, and in the rest of them, different drugs. So phosphorus and calcarea are two very important remedies to control the malignant state of pheochromocytoma. But for symptomatic approach, only for controlling the palpitations and the blood pressure, we do need require to give Viratam Viridi either in mother tincture form, or even you can give in millisimal scale. I normally give in millisimal scale, 0/1 or 0/2, 0/3 starting.
Okay. Was there anything else dealing with palpitations?
Yeah. I mean, so this is the contemporary view of palpitations, normally what you would expect from a cardiologist. But in our repertory, when you see palpitations as a rubric, I mean, so many pages, about 5 pages of our different rubrics are given. And lots of them contain palpitations because of emotions like anger, anticipation, anxiety, fear, grief, hysteria, joy, or thinking about complaints, bringing on palpitations. And we have got a host of other remedies like phosphorus and arsenic. Then if there's a palpitations because of exercise, I mean, many patients who are obese, or many patients who I ask them, please do exercise, they would say, doctor, I agree that you ask me to do exercise, but the moment I start exercising, I get palpitations. In such a situation, I mean, I give a drug called as asafoetida. Asafoetida is a very, very essential drug, wherein it is at a specific rubric, exercise causing palpitations. And it definitely takes care of that complaint. So again, that patient who wants to do exercise, but just because of the palpitations is not wanted to, cannot do the exercise, starts doing the exercise again by hardly few doses of asafoetida. Then many people complain of palpitations while bathing or having sex. Post-coital palpitations is very, very, apart from the love portion involved in the palpitation, we are talking about actual palpitations occurring after sex, the sexual act is performed. And in there, the finest drug is Crategus.
Okay.
Now, palpitation can be a symptom of coronary artery disease. I mean, can angina variant can manifest as palpitation. For example, I may be having coronary artery disease, and after sexual intercourse, I severely get palpitations after every coitus. In such a situation, allopathically, they give sorbitrate. They would give nitrates. But in homeopathy, we have got specific remedy, Lachesis. Lachesis is a specific remedy, which is a remedy for angina variant. I mean, it basically is a symptom of angina, but manifesting not as pain, but as palpitations after sexual activity. It's a very annoying activity problem. It is, a thing which very few people actually tend to share. But then whenever they do so, Lachesis in small potencies, 30, 200, takes care of the symptom very effectively. Then there's something called as palpitations, reflex palpitations. I mean, whenever the patient has flatulence, excess flatulence, or belching, then there's severe palpitations. Now, this may be accompanied with heart disease or may not be accompanied with any disease. It's just always there. Whenever there's a burp or a belch, then there's a palpitation. And the only drug in our Materia Medica is Carbovege. Then there's something, some people cannot have tea. They cannot enjoy tea. Moment they are hypersensitive to tea. Now in such a situation, they get palpitations. And nature has been kind enough that for such people, the only antidote for palpitations or the only therapy for palpitations homeopathically is thia, which is again prepared from tea. So if they have thia in potentized form, they can enjoy tea if they are suffering from palpitations because of drinking tea.
So is this a higher potency?
Yeah, I would recommend normally say 1 mg. And I ask them just before having tea, you have to take that drug. And you don't need to keep on continuing. I mean, you can repeat it once a week or say twice a week. And it hardly takes a month or so, and the palpitations go away.
Okay. So there's a lot to do with palpitations that people probably did not realize how frequently and in what circumstances it occurs. And then the variety of homeopathic remedies are vast.
Yeah. And see, even if you're continuously complaining of palpitations, many, many female doctors as well as patients think it's emotional, which is very wrong to think. I would recommend that all patients who complain of sustained palpitations, they should have an electrocardiogram done. And if an electrocardiogram has an evidence of previous myocardial infarction or enlargement of the heart, say right heart or left heart hypertrophy or atrial enlargement, then they should undergo, under supervision, a treadmill test. Treadmill test is an important it will detect whether palpitations are because of coronary artery disease, and it's very, very essential to do so. So basic investigations for palpitations are an ECG, and even if ECG comes normal, an echocardiogram or an electrocardiogram coming normal, one would recommend, as a cardiologist and as a physician, I would recommend a treadmill to be done. Let it come normal. Even if it comes normal and the palpitation continues, then there is something called as a continuous EKG Holter monitor. It's a small ECG machine which can record data for 24 to 48 hours. It is basically attached to the person. For example, if I have a complaint of palpitation, my cardiologist will attach the Holter monitor to me. It's a small machine. It can put in my pocket. And with that, I can do all my work. I should go home. I'll do all my routine work. I can go to office. And throughout the 24 hours, the ECG is continuously being recorded in that Holter. So whenever I've got palpitations, if there are specific ECG EKG changes, then they will be recorded. And my cardiologist can connect to the computer, will analyze the entire 24-hour EKG, and will give me remedy if there are problems in my EKG. Further on, if still these modalities do not tell us whether or not I have a heart problem, then I can go for cardiac catheterization or a coronary angiogram. So these are very, very important investigations. Then there are something called as ventricular tachycardias or supraventricular tachycardias, which are definitely related to the heart. Now, in such cases, in spite of giving good therapy, medical therapy, medications, palpitations keep on continuing, arrhythmias keep on continuing, then what we do is we go to a cardiac cath lab. There's something called as electrophysiological studies, where they pinpoint an aberrant pathway. I mean, there are many pathways where the electrical conduction of the heart takes place. And those electrical, I am not going to go in details, but then with the help of a laser beam, they would ignite that or burn that pathway, accessory pathway, and for permanently my palpitations would stop, but my heart would keep on continuing. So in the end, I would like to say that whenever a patient has palpitations, get a good history, do a good physical examination, get an EKG done. Think about heart, but not only the heart. I mean, you should not always be perturbed that whenever I have palpitations, only the heart. Yes, heart is beating fast, but then that not maybe the only cause. Rather, it's the cause only in 40% of cases. 60% of causes are non-cardiac causes. But then you have to think about diet. You have to think about the present medications which I may be taking. I have to go to my doctor and talk that the medications which I, for example, have taken for asthma or for epilepsy can definitely cause palpitations. So I need to change those drugs. Many people take Viagra for impotency or for enhancing sexual pleasure. Again, that's a very, very important drug causing palpitations. And even if people leave that drug, palpitations may continue, so one needs to consult. Medications form an important part of palpitations. And many hypochondriac people have a habit of taking medications without consulting the doctors. And then they keep on suffering from palpitations. And for palpitations, they keep on taking another set of drugs. So that is what I need to talk about palpitations and give this information.
There was one question in the chat that asked about hyperthyroidism and its relationship to the heart disease.
Yeah. See, thyroid hormone. Now, thyroid hormone is a very, very important hormone which controls the basal metabolic rate. The entire metabolism and the rate at which it progresses is controlled by thyroid gland. You should have a normalcy between levels of thyroid hormone should not be too high or too low. If it is too low, then we call it hypothyroidism, and if it's too high, then hyperthyroidism. Hyperthyroidism generally occurs, say, after 40-45 years. What a disease which is called as Graves' disease. And it's really grave because it's very difficult to treat that Graves' disease. But anyway, it occurs in females. It's an autoimmune disease. It's Graves' disease. And the features of hyperthyroidism are sympathetic hyperactivity. That is, first and foremost, inability to bear heat in any form. In the same temperature today, I can bear the temperature of the place where I'm born, where I'm brought up. But suddenly, if I get hyperthyroid, I would not be able to bear that temperature. Second would be tremors. Fine tremors would be there. If I catch a cup of tea, the entire cup of tea would be moving with me. And third would be palpitations. These can be the only three features for hyperthyroid for a particularly long time. If it is undetected, or even if it is detected, then drugs can be given to correct. Now, that drug can take a minimum of, say, 7 days to a month. But till that time, I may suffer from all these complaints, like tremors, like palpitations. And they are really annoying. I mean, they disturb the person's day-to-day activity. You just can't work with loud pounding in your heart day in and day out. Although the correction is being made. So in such a situation, we have got the drugs which I told you, say Auramet, which can relieve you for quite amount of time till your original disease is taken care of.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're getting close to the end of the session today. And I think we should repeat again the information about the Liga, and that it is where it is taking place and how many days, and it's an annual event where homeopathic physicians from all over the world, it's an international gathering, a conference, where they present their information, their cases, or their research. And you're in India now, so do you know how many people are going to be attending?
I have no idea, but I believe the number can easily cross 1,000.
Yes.
Odd candidates.
Yes, I hope maybe I will be able to attend in future years. But it should be an outstanding conference.
Yes.
And
actually,
I think that... Yes.
See, India and the Indian subcontinent has one of the largest number of homeopaths in the world. And many, many, if not all, are very dedicated homeopaths. And this type of conference is the 66th World Congress of Liga. And it's to be held at Sri Fort Auditorium, New Delhi, on a very, very large places for such a huge event. Of course, I would expect more than 1,000 and odd people. Many people have started pooling in already, and I'm yet to go. I'll be flying tomorrow, and I'll be talking about tuberculomyasm and heart disease. I will also be talking about the newer drugs which have been proved at the academy, and finally, role of homeopathy in atherosclerotic heart disease, which is my original topic talk on 4th of this. It is a 4-day congress. The first day starts tomorrow, the grand opening, and the second, third, and fourth days, we have divided the days according to different subjects. For example, the last day, that is the fourth, would be dealt exclusively for case reports. The third day would be for researches. The second day would be for philosophical subjects, for example, miasms and potencies and other subjects. And the first day would be more or less general. The eminent speakers throughout the world, they would be delivering the talks. So more or less, the entire pathy from different angles has been covered, and there are huge. I hear there are about more than 100 speakers. So, and they all would be giving a talk in different halls. So, it has to be a grand event, and the homeopathic world would learn much, much more, and would be exposed. The audience would be exposed to great amount of literature, great amount of research going on, authentic research, case-based research, evidence-based homeopathy would be very, very evident there in Liga.
Right, and this year's theme is called Public Health and Epidemic Diseases. There is a event listing on Homeopathy World Community on the front page that tells you more information, telephone number, contacts, if maybe somebody in the last minute wants to be able to get to go there and just sign in for any of the days. I don't imagine you'd have to be there for the entire time.
Yeah. I mean, that is very much possible. The details can be had on the website there. But as far as public health is concerned, the National Academy of Homeopathy India is also conducting a three-day hands-on workshop on gynecology and obstetrics, where we'll be dealing every single aspect of gynecology and obstetrics with homeopathy. I mean, and there would be live cases. We would be conducting labors with, demonstrating labors with the use of homeopathy, how pulsatilla, how gelsemium, how colophyllum is used to initiate pregnancy, pains. And we'll be talking about every smallest of small thing, right from abortions to sterility to breast abscess and malignancies of the breast, how to manage them homeopathically. So it's a three-day feast conducted from 26th, 27th and 28th of December at Nagpur. So people, again, are welcome here.
Okay, so why don't you send me that information and I'll post it onto the website about the National Academy for the later end of December. And that sounds like it would be of much interest to many physicians and women in general, family planning in general, to learn more about homeopathy and gynecology and obstetrics.
Because so, here we have a hospital, so it's a hospital-based study, and it's a live study. We would not be only talking about videos. There would be live cases. There would be, live case demos would be show how to take the case. And every topic has been to be discussed practically, how a homeopath can apply. So it would be a great feast, which we are working upon. It's a three-day workshop. People are welcome, and I would definitely be posting you the matter which I've just said.
Okay, wonderful. So I want to encourage everyone to help spread this knowledge and wisdom that we have from the sages and from Dr. Adel, who has been practicing cardiology and homeopathy for so many years. Get on Twitter, let people know that way, post it on your Facebook page, download the widget for this radio show and put it on your website, put it on your emails, the links to these shows, put it on your email so that people might inquire about the show. There are so many different ways that people can learn about homeopathy. So help spread the word. And I want to thank you once again, Dr. Adel. We're going to end today's show. Have a wonderful week. And we will see about next week what our show is going to be about.
Sure. Thank you very much. And I would want the next time we will be talking about rheumatic heart disease, rheumatic endocarditis, which is again a very prevalent disorder in today's times in countries like India and in the subcontinent, and believe throughout Africa and Europe also, rheumatic heart disease, scarlet fever, has played a great menace. We'll be talking something about that.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adel Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time.